last several years while he was still in the military, as well as since then. We're going to talk a lot about these things. I ran into him again over the years. I'd seen him where he had been in various, sometimes talking at various events that Women Against Military Madness had. But I saw him at the Saturday night talk by Medea Benjamin. And so, and everybody there was so happy that just before then, last month, in the middle of last month, there was a full-page ad in the New York Times, and it was entitled, "The U.S. Should Be a Force for Peace in the World." And one of the signers was Todd Pierce. So I wanted him to come on the show here and talk about why he was part of it. There was a segment on Democracy Now! With Dennis Fritz, who's the director of the Eisenhower Media Network and who had been a command chief master sergeant, U.S. Air Force retired. But thank you very much for signing that ad. Why don't you talk about how that ad came about and how you decided that you should be signing that?
An acquaintance of mine, a friend of mine, Matt Hull, who's a former Marine and then worked for the State Department in Iraq, maybe in Afghanistan too, I forget details, but he was soliciting people to sign it that he thought had something relevant to say about it. A friend of mine, Colleen Raleigh, who lives here in Minneapolis, a former FBI agent, had been contacted, and then he contacted me, and he told me about it, and I looked at what the ad would say, and I agreed to sign on. And the other people, including Jack Matlock, who was the last ambassador to the Soviet Union from the United States, he too signed it, and I don't even remember who some of the others who were signing it without in front of me. I'm sorry, but the message it said was something that I thought the American people needed to know, and so I was actually eager, you could say, to sign it to actually get lend my support for this important statement. And the point is the statement, and if I may just step back for a second. So I retired from the Army in the end of 2012, where I'd been a Guantanamo defense attorney. In the course of that work and before, from the time our wars began, 9/11, 2001, I'd just been totally perplexed and disturbed by the militarism that the United States had jumped into, having not failing to recognize that it had a long history of that, which perhaps I can say a little bit more of as we go along. But with 9/11, it just unleashed our passions, you could say. We wanted war. So the first target of our wars were Muslims, domestically and internationally, with the global war on terror. I said at the time, or said various places, that was the biggest mistake we made, the global war on terror, not dismissing that something had to be done. But I argued, as did many other people, including in Europe, that a law enforcement paradigm should have been what should have been followed. And I agree with that. We made things worse. We made things incredibly worse. But it also unleashed the militaristic passions of the American people. To begin with, mostly, mostly in the Republican Party, but to a large degree, in an ever-increasing degree, also in the Democratic Party. But never enough to catch up to the Republicans. Let me be clear on that. You can tell the difference when they come up with Defense Department proposals for spending, and the Republicans will always be 10% more than the Democrats, it seems like, none of which is to excuse the incredible militarism of the Democrats today. But anyway, what this has led to is now we're on the precipice of even nuclear war. So dangerous is this situation. But without naming the organization, I'm in an organization that is concerned with nuclear weapons and the legal aspect of it. And people there who I thought were more sober-minded and have a long history of being involved in these legal issues totally bought into, you know, Russia invaded, we got to, you know, do everything against them, blah, blah, blah. And to use that overused term, I hate to do that. But, and I thought, wait a minute, there's more to this. And so as a former Army officer, one of my daily reading is to go on the Pentagon's news site called Early Bird. And it's sponsored by Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, the military industrial complex. And they also sponsor something called Defense News, available, you know, the two, they all work together. And for years, I mean, well over a decade, going back to even before 2014 and to the very beginning, you could say, of the global war on terror, we've always been demonizing Russia, too. I've had a little bit of a background in psychological operations, being trained in that, having that interest of political warfare for some perverse reason ever since the Vietnam years, which won't go into that story, but got trained eventually, and so I could see that this was all taking place, you know, political warfare, psychological warfare against the American people to generate the kind of hatred that's required to go to war, as Clausewitz said. You know, if you want to have peace, I don't know if how the expression goes, I think it might have been said study peace, but I'll say no, study war, study the theory of war, how it is that governments get people to go to war. Goering, or what, I think it was Goering that said...
Hermann Goering from Nazi Germany.
Yeah, he's famously quoted as, well, of course people don't want to go to war, but all you got to do is gin up a little fear, basically, and they'll rush off, you know. And, well, I saw that at 9/11 on the very day that it happened within our military command here out at Fort Snelling, where I saw this hysteria take over, what I would only describe as hysteria take over within our own command. And then on the way home after, you know, after a very long day of work, amongst people that I saw along the way home, up on cross, you know, pedestrian crossing on above the freeway, waving banners, etc. It was something I never thought I'd see, that kind of hysteria take hold, and it's never really diminished. You could say it just only takes a triggering comment to generate it again. So we have this collective memory of the Soviet Union, which sometimes will be described as Russia, even though the Soviet Union included Ukraine, Georgia, the two leading figures, you could say, in the Soviet Union in their most aggressive times, or at least was a Georgian, Stalin, who was the worst of the worst, you could say, of the Soviet leaders. And then following him came Khrushchev, a Ukrainian, who as a Ukrainian, paying off his fellow Ukrainians in some way, maybe he transferred Crimea, which had long been Russian territory. I mean, that's where the, when the English invaded Russia during the British-Russian war, that the, you know, into the Valley of the Death or whatever.
Oh, yes. The Charge of the Light Brigade.
Charge of the Light Brigade. That was in Crimea. Yes. And not far from Sevastopol, which is a Russian Navy base and has been for ever, as far as I know.
Back when Catherine the Great was in power in Russia, and back in the 13th century or 13th century, so it's been quite a while that it was Russian.
Exactly, and you look at the Black Sea, Sevastopol is basically the equivalent of what the British have as Gibraltar, as a place to protect themselves from invasions from the sea. Of course, Gibraltar is not near Britain, but put to use for English colonialism, imperialism.
Yeah, exactly,
in
right.
The same way.
Exactly, so, right.
When we had the coup led by who all, we don't know, but Victoria Nuland being most prominent, that famously saying, fuck the EU, if you remember, if you don't mind me putting it that way. But obviously others were involved. The CIA, of course, is always involved with the regime change operations. And the National Endowment for Democracy would have been involved. And